So if we could talk a little bit, I'm not sure I got the whole picture in terms of the vicious cycle that we're facing right now, where the Seleka came in, pillaged, took the not only the food, but the seed material, the cultivation material, the livestock. Not only is the situation acute right now, but next harvest season is really in dubious shape right now.
So throughout the country, what we're looking at is that in August, in harvest season, every year for, you know, eons or however long, just before harvest season is the sudor, which just means the lean season. It's when people, you know, they've spent all their energy and all their money and all of their effort in planting and cultivating their crops. And then, you know, just those last month or two before the harvest comes in, most people, they've used up all their stock from last year. They've used up all the money they spent on seed and food and everything else. All right, now everyone is running to get buckets to carry the seed. So they explain that they have to carry the seed themselves, so they're all going home to get buckets. So every lean season here, just before harvest, people are down to, from what little we've done with like a rapid food assessment, food security assessment, they're down to like 1-2 meals a day, maybe eating just manioc, which is a perennial crop, so it grows it grows all year round. But then the harvest comes in and boom, they've got food to eat, they have something to sell, so they have an income, they can buy medicine, they can buy whatever else it is that they need, clothing, anything else, variety of food they can purchase. But in this area, they got attacked last year during the harvest season, which means that a lot of the crops went uncultivated and unharvested. Those crops that were good and did come in, a lot of those got trampled and eaten when the pull, the nomadic herders, were not prevented from, usually they're prevented from going into fields until after the harvest, but instead the animals were grazed right on the crops. And the animals also were let in into the manioc fields and destroyed a lot of the manioc fields. A lot of the manioc tubers are rotting in the fields now. They're not edible anymore. This happened last August in 2013. So this entire season, people have been really struggling. They've been using different coping mechanisms, eating the fruit that grows around the mangoes, eating the mangoes while they're green, before they're ripe, because they can't wait. They've been eating, depending on their manioc crop. So
they've eaten what livestock they had left.
Yeah, if they had livestock that wasn't taken, they've been eating that. Or maybe possibly selling it. A lot of people are selling manioc in Bosengoa, or selling it, you know, to Bosengoa traders who bring it to Bangi. So rather than even eating their own reserves, they're selling it to be able to buy a little something, if, you know, medicine or whatever else they might need to buy. So at this stage, a lot of people here are using up their coping mechanisms. They're using up their survival strategies. We're giving out seed. If they get the seed in the ground before the end of planting season, so before the rains, are done, they'll have a harvest in August. With the harvest in August, we can stop this downward cycle. And then they can, you know, it's not going to be a full harvest. We're not able to give everybody enough seed that they can completely recover everything, but it'll be something where they can stop, they can have enough, they can have something to sell, something to eat, and can start to like rebuild their lives. If they don't get the seeds in the ground this year, they will have already used up their coping strategies. A lot of people, I'm obviously not speaking for everybody, but for the people in the worst off spots, which Buka Axe that we're on right now and Benzumbe to the northeast are in those areas, people will have already used their coping strategies, and so they'll either resort to worse coping strategies or we're looking at people might start dying.
And you're already seeing signs of malnutrition from people who didn't have a crop this year.
Yeah, particularly in Benzambe, where we've been doing distributions, we've seen visible signs of childhood malnutrition. Like, you know, you can see the kids with the big bellies, and like you've seen on like TV commercials, you get to that, like you can visibly identify. And then we've confirmed and triangulated that with several different ways. We've talked to MSF has some weekly clinics. They go up to that area and they've treated children for acute malnutrition. Acute malnutrition can include starving to death. It can also include kids who have so little nourishment that they can't fend off other diseases. So you start seeing
opportunistic infections.
Exactly, problems like that, as well as like just people who are languishing, like they don't have as much strength, they don't have as much ability to re-roof their homes or go out in search of work or plant crops when they do get seeds.
And you mentioned something the other day that I thought was interesting. There's a missing component now, because this area had a vibrant Muslim community that filled the social role of traders and marketers and bringing goods into the city and the outlying communities. What happened to that community?
So there are no Muslims left in Bosengoa town, and there are very probably no Muslims left in any of the towns in this entire region, and they just learned what they're getting, so that they're getting seeds today.
But you mentioned, which I thought was a kind of interesting angle, that the important role that the Muslim community played and is now absent.
So there used to be a certain amount of the Muslim community was quite integrated. Definitely in Bosengoa, there's a very big, vibrant market there. And the market traded with Bangi, the market traded with Chad, the market traded to the east and the west as well, with like smaller villages or smaller big towns and market areas. When those Muslims were attacked and were forced into the Ecole Liberté displaced people's camp, and now they've been pushed out completely to Chad.
And I'll briefly note that they felt comfortable when the Chadian troops were there, but when the Chadian troops left after some conflict in Bangui, the Muslims no longer felt they had a protector that they could rely on. So they followed the Chadian troops out of Central African Republic.
Exactly. Basically, there's no functioning trade anymore. And so some of the things that you'll see is driving down the road, you might see giant stores of cotton just languishing because no one's buying the cotton, because the cotton was sold to, I believe it was sold to Chad. Nobody has the upfront money to pay the farmers for cash crops anymore. So all these farmers who had crops and maybe even had a successful crop have no one to sell it to. And so, you can't eat cotton. So if they don't get money for that cash crop, they don't have anything. They also, there's a lot fewer things to buy. When you do go to the market in Bosengoa, what you're going to see is manioc, which we just discussed is people from villages like this who have like a need of some cash, who are selling their survival food. Like they're making that trade-off between, do I eat this or do I sell it so I can have medicine or a roof or a blanket or something. So those like very like intense trade-offs are happening, and you're just seeing like bush meat, which is like same thing, like people are going out into the woods and hunting animals. Some of them might be commonly eaten animals, and that's normal, but there's also some animals that are less commonly eaten.
The commercial networks having been disrupted by the conflict, the Muslim traders aren't bringing in all those other little goods that make a house habitable. Soap,
right.
And things like that
are not available.
Yeah,
and so the cash crops from here are not being sold, and then so there's no income coming in, and then they don't have anything to buy either. They're the very, like, if you do have some money, your options for purchasing food are very, very limited.
So this could be a long-term problem for the northern.
This could be like. And the FAO's president even made this statement, like, this, we could be looking at a famine in the Central African Republic in August. It's like make or break it this harvest season. If people have food to eat in August, they can start to recover. If people don't have seeds in the ground now and they have no crop in August and they have already used up many of their coping strategies, people will start to die. And whether they'll die because of opportunistic infections or whether they'll die because of literally having no food, I don't know, and I don't want to be like over the top or melodramatic, but like we're already at stage one of the food crisis, because the the crops last year got destroyed. Yeah. It's not like this is the first year of crop destruction. Yeah. This is the second one.
But even beyond that, I mean, that crisis is obviously, we've got an acute food crisis, but in terms of restoring a normal market, a normal trade process here, the selling cash crop like cotton, we could be years and years away from that.
Absolutely. Totally, absolutely. Because there's, right now, people are focusing on, if they are planting crops, they're planting
subsistence food.
Right, yeah. Food, subsistence food. They're not planting all of their crops. They're, like, all of their land they have access to. So they're very much, like, in terms of restoring, you know, also all the trading links are broken.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know, who are you going to sell the cotton to if the person who is buying the cotton was a Muslim trader in Chad?
Yeah.
That person is not going to buy your cotton again. Or if he is, he's not going to give you a good price.
And right now it's very hard to imagine the Muslim community coming back to this area.
That's really true. And I can't speak for it. And I hope, like, in my heart that it does one day, that, you know, there is reconciliation and people do come back. And that's a question for the shelter project we have going, is we're being as careful as possible to make sure when we're giving people help to rebuild a home that it's their proper home and they're not squatting an empty Muslim's home, because we don't want to be pushing people out and we want to make sure that there's still opportunity to return. But after the violence upon revenge upon revenge upon revenge, like, it's very hard to, I don't want to say something hopeless.
Yeah, but it doesn't look good. There's no point in pretending otherwise. For people who don't understand, you know, we've been hearing, we heard a little bit about what happened when the Seleka came in here, and then the anti-Balakas strike back against that. Can you talk about what happened? You know, I don't think people understand the context of the rage, I guess, of the anti-Balaka militias. What is the nature of that? Why what generated that?
It started before this, as in the Seleka had their own mistreatment that pushed their own rage under the former president Bozize. Bozize was from this area, specifically he was from the northeast of us, the Benzembe region. So when the Seleka did their march towards Bangui and they stopped in the Benzembe area, they took out a lot of rage at coming from a very neglected, poverty-stricken, also abused region. They took that rage out on Bozize's home region. Unfortunately, there were a lot of people other than Bozize who lived there. And so when the Seleka were here, they burned houses. Like, they would come into a village, guns blazing and, like, pickups. Everyone who could run, ran. But anyone who couldn't run
or too slow,
was afraid to run, was trying to save somebody else, you know, like disabled people, little children, pregnant women, old people, anyone who stayed to help, anybody who, whatever, was caught unawares on the road, the Seleka would push, this is the stories that I've heard, like, out doing distributions on the field, Seleka would push people into homes and then set them on fire. And so a lot of the folks you're seeing in front of you have family or neighbors who they may have seen burned alive. And so when the Antabalaka began to form, and they formed in the Benzembe area, that's where they started very much as community self-defense. And to a certain degree in this area, they remain community self-defense, that they're... When they left this area to follow the Seleka, they took out all of their rage. You know, the little teenage boy who watched his family or friends or whoever burn alive, they have a lot of impotent rage, and they took that out on Muslim civilians.
Defenseless Muslims that they came across.
Yeah. And so that's why you hear about these, like, mutilations and lynchings and other, you know, Muslim people being burned alive was the same. It was just, like, just revenge being enacted out, this trauma being passed on to other people.
And so in addition to feeding people today, Catholic Relief Services is engaged in efforts to begin programs of reconciliation and dialogue between these two communities, which have been so badly savaged, partly against each other, I guess.
And that's really true. We have a program called SEC, CURE, it's a French acronym, but it's a social cohesion.
Yeah.
And then also you'll find that the Catholic religious leaders in CAR have taken a very active role in inter-religious peace movements. For example, it was the Caritas, the Catholic Church here, that helped run the Eco Liberté camp in Bosengoa. Some of our Caritas animators were Muslim.
This is the camp where the Muslims were until they left with the Chadian troops, were staying.
Yeah, some of our Caritas animators were Muslims who lived in that camp. They left with all the other Muslims when they had to flee to Chad because they would not have been safe to stay. But yeah, there's been a lot of work, like interreligious work, that the SEC program has done and the Catholic leadership has engaged in.
We're looking at years more of that, I imagine. Well, listen, Kyla, I'm going to give you a break. You've been talking a lot, so thank you so much.